When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Season 2, Episode 1 of 6 Feet Under, In the Game, is over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps. That's right, we're back! It is the 6 Feet Under podcast, where we are revisiting the critically acclaimed HBO series, episode by episode. It is Season 2 time! Look at us, my name is Ariel, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Dr. Amanda. It's me. You answered my personal ad in the LA Weekly, Dr. Amanda. I'm the fireman.
Oh my goodness. What a great match. You'll forgive me. I have this really big glass of water here because I have major cotton mouth, Ariel. Does that ever happen to you?
Did you take aspirin today?
I just popped a couple aspirin and I am ready to go on a wild ride with this podcast. It's all about flow.
It's all about flow, and you should continue to let the podcast flow for yourself by subscribing. Search for 6 Feet Under post-show recaps. There is a URL, postshowrecaps.com/6feetunder. We would love you to subscribe to our 6 Feet Under. And we keep saying it's Season 2. Wow, I'm so excited to be back. What did you think of this episode, Amanda? I mean, you already brought up the ecstasy, the aspirin. I love a hanging thread, so I'm already excited. How do you feel?
Oh, I'm so excited to be back for Season 2. We took a little bit of a break over the holidays, and I missed this, Ariel. I missed us. I missed 6 Feet Under. I missed the listeners. So I was so excited to come back. I thought that this was a great episode. I feel like there's like a little bit of a boost in the production value with the Season 2. I don't know if you noticed that, like a little bit more, like we're at the beach a little bit more in different locations.
It's giving exterior shots.
Yes. Even like
scope.
There was a very like the death this week had like a very kind of produced, like lots of extras, big scene in terms of that. So like, I feel like it's coming in super strong with season two. I can't wait to talk about it. I was so glad that we have the ecstasy plot line come back with another unwitting Fisher getting high against
if
the will.
If you know, you know.
But, and by the way, how absolutely unhinged crazy is David that he doesn't go back to the bot, like, after having this, like, how this he just leaves
wild.
The ecstasy in the family aspirin.
This is like his villain origin story he eventually becomes Dexter. This is like the first sign of a serial killer behavior. Michael C. Hall, how dare you leave it in there? Because if it's the only one, and then I was thinking back, I'm like, oh my God, how many were there? Like, how many pills did he take? I think there were only two. So it's like, if there was only one pill in there, you could definitely distinguish it from the other aspirin. Like, it would have taken all of 10 seconds of sleuthing to figure out
they
which
don't look
pill.
Exactly the same. They're like usually like they're different sizes or different. I mean, I don't know. I don't. I assume.
I feel like it is 99% sure that they are not the exact same shape as the aspirin.
That would be wild. And like, even if so, throw if like, I guess ideally you don't want to throw out. I don't know. Like, does
throw it away. Aspirin is like the cheapest medicine. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not wasteful, but in this case, you don't want either take the aspirin for yourself, put it in your room and use it for yourself.
And you
and
get
gamble.
The surprise Russian roulette ecstasy.
Yeah. Maybe it'll kick in when you make yourself the third wheel on a date. I don't know. Perhaps we'll see. We'll get
that could be that. A fun thing. Go out to the club and either take aspirin or ecstasy and just see where it goes.
Am I taking a pain reliever or am I taking a pleasure enhancer?
Yeah.
It'd probably be kind of boring.
Two sides of the same coin. I'm very happy to be back with season two and like picking up steam again with my 6 Feet Under rewatch.
Yeah, it was so nice to get back in the game with this episode in the game. I've never seen, I will out myself now, I have never seen a High School Musical, but I understand that is a popular, or a song from the first one, I think.
Oh,
your head in the game, maybe? Anyway, whatever.
I've certainly never seen High School Musical.
You're like, my children are thankfully unaware of that franchise.
That is a pop culture blind spot that I embrace.
That we are going to accept for a long time. Mm-hmm. No shade. Okay, let's get into the episode. We are so hungry to talk specifics. So we're going to get into our quick plot recap as we did the entire season one. Welcome back to everyone. And this episode in the game, directed by Rodrigo Garcia, written by Alan Ball himself. Here we go. This week's death is C-list actor Rebecca Leah Milford, who dies of an overdose on cocaine at the premiere of the slasher flick she is starring in. But it felt very Scream 2. Unfortunately for Fisher and Sons, Rebecca was afraid of the dark and hated dolphins, which means a cheap funeral and a cremation instead of some of the more expensive things that they would rather hawk onto them. Less money, honey, as Jess puts it here. Meanwhile, Nate and Brenda's relationship is in a rough patch, hasn't it always? According to Jess, as Brenda struggles with depression, but hates when Nate points it out, doesn't want to talk about it. And of course, Nate avoids talking about his problems altogether, in case you forgot. His problem was the diagnosis he received last season at the end of the AVM in his brain, which is a malformation of blood vessels, as Dr. Amanda has explained to us so thoughtfully. He's frustrated that his doctor doesn't have a clear answer for him beyond maybe doing a surgery that might help him. Nate does try to strangle him in his mind, which is fun. Nate decides to self-medicate with a daily aspirin to thin his blood, which is like one, this is like his version of like drinking the milk. I don't know. There's something that, as far as David, there's something like really like wholesome and kind of weird about it. It's according to Jess, it seems to be the exact opposite of what you should be doing in this situation, but we'll leave that to our resident doctor. And whoops, he ends up taking the aforementioned ecstasy that was left in the bottle. Like I said, I love a hanging thread, or in this case, a hanging pill. How many more pills are in that bottle and why hasn't Steven sipped it?
No, Jess is just as upset about this as we are, as any sane person would be.
It's wild. Nate is high during the family dinner and later has visions of his father joined by his father's friends, life and death. Nate is forced to play a game of Chinese checkers with them, which he hates because he doesn't know how to play and he doesn't know how it will end. Just like a problem in his brain. However, he learns that you can't have life without death. They're working together. It's crazy. It's a scam. And life and death give him a saucy visual demonstration. Nate Sr. shares some wisdom that turns out to be from a Bhagavad Gita, excuse my pronunciation, which he read at Brenda's house. And the quote is, "All that lives, lives forever. Only the shell, the perishable, passes away. The spirit is without end, eternal, deathless." Which I like rushed to write down also, and then Brenda also like shamed me, so whatever. Elsewhere, Ruth is arranging the aforementioned dinner party for her children and their partners as a way of telling David that she's okay with him being gay. Because she read it in this horrible book about how to understand one's gay child. So, yeah.
Now you know.
When I read the title, it was more like, well, now you know. Like, so unnecessarily negative. Okay, yeah. So Nate is super high at this dinner. David is miserable because he's unintentionally celibate. That's right, he has gonorrhea. And Claire is doing her best to be there for Gabe while he repeatedly pushes her away and also like keeps disappearing, which worries her. It seems like Rico's family might have money problems as Vanessa asked to borrow $500 from her sister, Angelica. And Rico does not like that. He storms off in a whirlwind of Spanish curses. And I think that's everything. That's what happened this episode.
Jam-packed episode. Where do you want to start with our breakdown, Ariel?
Let's see. I feel like I love Claire, but the Gabe storyline, as usual, is like annoying me. So I think like let's get that over with.
All right, let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Yeah, so Claire and Gabe are still together. This like they're, you know, I mentioned we have all of these external beach shots in mm-hmm. this episode. Claire is getting, I think, increasingly annoyed with Gabe for like skipping class, mm-hmm. getting high. She's worried about him overdosing again. He like seems to really minimize her concerns and like ultimately decides that it would be kind of like a fun idea to see the place where they embalm the bodies and go to a funeral.
Yeah, this is a lot. And he points out and you on some level you have to believe that like he brings it up, right? His brother, like, oh, this is probably where they had my brother's body. And Claire, of course, you know, in the heat of the moment and just trying to like entertain him, has forgotten this. So she's like, oh crap, like maybe this wasn't a good idea. But he's like, no, this is good. Like, it's kind of what he wanted, which that part I understand, like the curiosity part of it. But it's a little bit troubling. And we see she has every reason to be troubled. But also I'm like, Gabe, get help. Like, can we get him help?
Yeah. I mean, Gabe's story is definitely, I think, in some ways, like reflected in the death of this week, the starlet Rebecca who dies here. And like, there's something about like her life and death that I think is supposed to be really, really pathetic and tragic. At some point, like Gabe says that the funeral is hilarious and that really bothers Claire. Like she sees that, you know, obviously this is somebody who died from an overdose. That's a concern that we have about Gabe given his history and his hospitalization. Yeah. And then we see that like at the funeral, these other like really dumb actors are snorting. Are they snorting like a mix of like coke cut with Rebecca's ashes?
As callous as this is going to sound, I certainly hope so, because the alternative is that they're just snorting her ashes. And I'm like, I'm just as surprised and bewildered and frankly offended as Claire is when she discovers that they're doing it. I hope it's cut up with Coke, because otherwise, what are they doing?
Yeah, you people are stupid. We'll see you back here soon. We'll be snorting you next time.
Maybe we'll be snorting you. And I love Nate's like, hey, Claire, you got to get out. This is her pool. It's their funeral.
They're paying. It's literally their funeral. But that way she'll always be a part of all of them.
It is kind of a sweet, morbid, yes, idea, you know, to like have the little keepsakes for everyone, but clearly this is not the group of people that's going to appreciate that kind of sentiment.
When I pass away, I want all of the post-show recaps podcasters to snort my ashen remains.
Can
you arrange for that?
Have to check with your husband, but yes, I would be happy to make that happen. Happy is the wrong word. I would be devastated, to be clear, but it would bring me joy to give you your wish after death. Do we think this Gabe at the store holding up the store is going to come back? Because I was like, the whole time I'm like, this was hanging over my head of the footage that they have. I mean, maybe it doesn't come back, but that seems unlikely. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we left them in season one. I think that's definitely a thread that could come back, but probably more likely it's just like, in general, Gabe's self-destructive behavior will continue and eventually come back to bite him. Like, Claire, you know, it seems like Gabe is like very hot and cold about Claire's concern and caring for him. Like, at some point he's like, I'm going to be okay as long as I have you, I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. But then by the end of the episode, he's pushing her away and saying like, I'm not your pet. Mm-hmm. And sort of storms off. So, I mean, we've kind of clocked this from the beginning that Gabe is bad news for Claire and kind of continues to be bad news for Claire. She seems to be getting more and more concerned. He's getting more withdrawn. So, you know, this is relationship is not for this world. Although I will say, I think that Gabe is like a little bit more handsome this season. I get it. His hair is like a little bit longer. I think he's like dressing a little bit better.
Yeah. There's definitely like a couple of, in his case, I would call it a glow up. In other people's case, I would call it like a glow sideways.
Oh,
like there's a change. Mm-hmm. Like there was something with like David's facial features where he looked a little bit thinner, I guess is the way I can say it. I noticed that. I was like, huh, he looks a little, and it makes him look, I think, a little older. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that as a pejorative thing as far as age. I just, It's something that I noticed. And then I'll bring it up here. Are Nate's sideburns bigger? Is that like, am I crazy? I think I'm anticipating like hair changes for him through the season.
Yeah. You know,
the lightest of spoilers. Apologies.
I do think that the sideburns are an element of Nate's look that does vary as the seasons go along. It didn't strike me very much like in this episode. Like, yeah, I don't want to get too much into just analyzing the way that actors' physical appearance.
Some random thoughts.
No, but I think we should do a facial hair watch and a sideburns watch. I do think that like the Gabe's facial hair is like a little bit better this season. Mm-hmm. So while his behavior is concerning, I think that his fashion sense and grooming is at least on the up and up.
Is on point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do like that. Yeah, that's Claire. She's back to babysitting, you know?
Yeah, unfortunately not a whole lot more for Claire to do this episode, but I just think more of hitting that note that this relationship is bad. But speaking of relationships that are bad, Nate and Brenda are continuing to have conflict. Like, I did notice this near the end of this season that there's almost like, there's like a big fight between Nate and Brenda almost every episode.
It's so, it's kind of annoying. And like, in the very beginning, we're watching them and I was like, oh, this is great. They seem like things are so good. And I'm like, you know what, Nate, your tricep looks great. But then like they're like, wait, why are they being snippy with each other? Oh no, not this. Like it's, and you know, you do get the sense, the show does a pretty good job of not having to hit you over the head with like how much time has passed.
Yeah.
But you do get the sense certainly here in this moment that not that much time has passed since, yeah, you know, the accident that they had. And that's obviously fairly traumatic, a little bit more for Nate and the secret that he's now keeping. But, you know, Brenda was there too, and she got hurt more seriously, at least as far as the accident. And it's totally normal and logical and fine for her to have a reaction and still be processing it. But as usual, it's manifesting in this way where she's pushing him away and she's like, she doesn't quite know what it is that she needs for herself.
Mm-hmm.
And it, again, it's always, as far as their relationship, Brenda's having an issue, whatever the issue is, and it's going to manifest as like, oh, Nate, no, I don't want that.
Yeah. Yeah. Brenda's like exhibiting some like classic signs of depression here. She says maybe she has some Oliver Sacks blow to the head disease. Shout out to neurologist and author Oliver Sacks.
I knew who that was.
Mm-hmm. He wrote The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat, which is like a very delightful book of neurological case studies.
I've read it twice. I'm wearing the hat.
Oh, that's a hat. It's like Brenda is clearly depressed, and there's obviously a lot of reasons for it. Like, we know what she's gone through with Billy, like how she feels about her family, everything else in her life. We're seeing, like I said, a lot of the pathognomonic signs, like lower libido. You know, at some point she's like, it's not happening for me, and Nate's like, well, you woke me up by going down on me, so like,
right, don't blame me, I didn't start this party.
She's also, you know, she's not working, we know. She's like kind of, we get the montage of her like smoking pot and like dancing and going through old books and kind of like effing around with her wardrobe. Like all the things that you do when you feel like too much of like a self-loathing slug to leave your house. Like,
she was getting rid of all her stuff from The Limited. She was like, we have more money this season for wardrobes. So I'm getting rid of all this trash and I'm going to upgrade. But yeah, she's basically smoking pot all day.
That would definitely go a long way, I think, towards improving Brenda's mood. I think that's a good, terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, there was something very innocent in a way of just like her being by herself and like having this time, and what kind of stuff do you get into, and you're not even sure what you're in the mood for. And you know, she looks to the pot to help her along a little bit. She gets by with a little help from her green friend, and you know, she's dancing. There is some hope in the like kind of joyfulness that she seems to be pursuing, at least, if not outright like feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it's she's going through something. She's trying to work through it on her own. Nate, I think, is like very well-meaning. He gives her this advice, like, you know, sometimes you have to force yourself to be active when you're depressed. While I can like
push through, come on, just feel better.
This is like good advice. This is basically the rationale behind behavioral activation, which is a treatment for depression. But it's like Nate does not deliver it with any kind of art. Like, I can definitely tell if I was like Nate's partner and he said that to me, being like, F you don't understand. Like, right. You know, it's like,
even just the way he asks, he's like, are you depressed? Like, he doesn't, I guess, to his credit, he doesn't say it in like a mean way. He's not like quite accusing her, but I agree with you that the delivery is neutral at best when it should be more caring and more patient.
He's trying, but like, he just doesn't have good instincts about this stuff. And like, Brenda is even going to say to him later, like, you can't fix this. This isn't something you can fix. And like, I think that that's a good note. Like, sometimes when in relationships, when one partner is depressed, like, it does put like quite a strain on the relationship, because somebody who's depressed, like, is, and Brenda's an example of this, like, can be really inwardly focused, like not able to care for somebody else, like pretty self-involved. And that causes a strain on a relationship. But for the other partner to take on this role that's like, I'm going to fix it. I have my act together. I have all the answers. You're a mess. It's like that message is not typically well received. So it can cause this dynamic that can be pretty conflictual. And I think that we see that in Brenda and Nate, and it results in he's wanting to be really clingy and wanting more and more and more of her to spend more time with her. She's feeling the pressure of that, and it makes her just kind of push him away more and more and causes like this vicious cycle that's creating, I think, more distance between them.
Yeah. And she's probably thinking, you can't fix this. Go fix your sideburns. That's what she's thinking. Something he can do that he has control over.
But then for Nate's part, like he's struggling with this news that's like extremely like he hasn't told a single soul about this condition. And I have to say, like, to give Brenda a little bit of shit, because we love to do that. Like, she is not like, yes, she's depressed. And like, yes, like she has reasons to be. But she's not picking up like anything that he's putting down. Like, he's very kind of earnestly just saying like, I need you right now.
Yeah.
And granted, she doesn't know why or where that's coming from. But every gesture, like every time he says, I love you, every time he says, like, I want to be with you, I need to be with somebody right now, she basically just pushes him away and is only concerned with like, well, I don't really feel like it. Like, it's just extremely one-sided. And maybe she's not in the right state now to be super sensitive to it. But he's trying, and she's mm-hmm. like not trying at all to be in a relationship.
Yeah, we get that moment later on where he's calling her and he's sitting on the stairs and he's like, she's like, not tonight. It's not a good night. I'm sorry. And he's like, okay, that's okay. But I just like really want to be with you right now in this moment. And that's like the biggest like screaming exclamation point example of like something, you know, something else is, it's not just Nate being needy at a moment where you're trying to, you know, have your own space. This is a little bit more. And you know, she can't see past her own fog at the moment, I guess is the generous way of putting it.
And you almost wonder, like, if she was a little bit more like willing to be with Nate and like be there and be supportive, like, would he tell her, like, if she showed up, like, mm-hmm. and she's just not showing up, and so he doesn't. But that, I mean, that was like that was like, I think, a little bit hard to watch, just kind of seeing Nate struggle with this alone, and you know, and Brenda really not reciprocating.
Especially because his doctor sucks.
Oh my gosh, this doctor was so bad. I hated this doctor so much. And this is kind of perfect because I don't know if any of our listeners are neurosurgeons, but I have a little bit of experience with neurosurgeons. Some of them are fine. Most of them are like the worst a-holes in like all of medicine. Like, damn. Like orthopedic surgeons are also like, they're like the bro-y jocks because they like, they fix
they
like
break
sports
things.
Injury. Like, okay, yeah. Okay. And like, but neurosurgeons, like, they think that they're like God, and they have like, uh-huh. this is a type. I'm not saying they're all like this, but a lot of them are like this.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hope I never see a neurosurgeon.
I know. Yeah,
oh God, now I'm thinking about Grey's Anatomy. I'm like, yeah, that kind of checks out. That kind of checks out the neurosurgeons we can.
I mean, look, I guess like in their theater is the operating room where like they, ooh, you know, like that's what they do. Yes. Talking to patients is not their strong suit.
No, my favorite part was when he looks at the stain on his arm and he's like, oh shit, what's that? He's like trying to clean it.
Yeah, Nate is like, I think in this scene, it's very like, he's very sympathetic in the way that he's just like, you know, really kind of giving it back to this guy. He's like, you know, he's like sort of saying, it's not our decision, it's my decision. I don't give an F what you think, you arrogant piece of shit.
when the doctor says it's bigger than I'd like it to be, and Nate's like, yeah, it's bigger than I'd like it to be as well.
But if somebody in your life behaved like Nate did in this doctor's appointment, like, you'd be like, I'm going to kill you. Like, I don't care if the AVM is going to kill you. The way that Nate is just like, I don't like this guy, so I'm going to throw my baby tantrum and say F off. Like, even though this guy deserves it because he's not being a good doctor, like, at the same time, it's like, you know, you might want to just give the doctor another chance because your brain might explode, Nate.
Oh God, it's so scary. And like, clearly he's, just by the fact, as you already pointed out, that he hasn't told anyone yet, it's like, it's already a little bit too much for him to handle, and for him to not have all the information, it's hard. And you certainly understand, he's like, well, screw this guy. It does seem like this is, you know, a second opinion person that he is pursuing.
Yeah.
So he, you know, ostensibly might have to go to someone else if he doesn't like this guy. But it's like,
well, I think that this
please
is
don't
probably,
give up. Please don't stop.
This know, is pursuing. The referral, I think, from the radiologist who's now referred him to like a surgeon who's going to like talk about treatment. Like, so I don't, it's like, get a second. If you don't like this guy, get a second opinion or get the next MRI. Like, do something. Like, Nate's solution is like, I don't like how this is going, so I'm just going to put it out of my head, no pun intended, and get on with my life. But this is like, this is avoidant Nate. This is like the Nate that's running away from death. Like, he says, you know, it's possible that like I wouldn't have even known about this, right? And then the guy's like, well, yeah, until something happens. And like, Nate would rather kind of like live in obliviousness and like never have known this. But it's the kind of thing that's maddening. And if like there was somebody in your life who was neglecting an important problem with their health in this way, like it would make you crazy. You would do everything you could to like make sure that they were taking care of this problem as responsibly as they can. But Nate's not going to tell anybody, and he's going to completely shut it out.
Yeah. I mean, the point about him running away is spot on. You know, he literally runs out of the office, you know, portent of death, so to speak, in his own brain. He can't run away from it. It's literally inside him, this thing that may or may not kill him.
He's in the game.
We will get to that.
Whether he likes it or not. And this like scene is immediately followed by a vision of him in the car with his father, which is again, like, I was like, yes, Richard Jenkins, more Nate Senior. And he does like, and he kind of gives voice to like the cruel joke of death, which is like, it's ironic. You don't smoke. You run every day. You eat all of this healthy crap. I smoked, drank. I ate anything I wanted. I inhaled embalming fluid every day. And if I didn't get hit by that bus, which is a big if, then I'd have lived to be 93.
It's wild. And like, I love the way that Nate envisions himself in the passenger seat, because he feels in a way like it's his position in his own life. And he gives the driver's seat to his father in his vision. And then like, it isn't until something really bad almost happens, like a death always around the corner, this car that they almost hit. And Nate is like, oh wait, no, I'm the one driving. I agree with you. Love Richard Jenkins. Love seeing him all the time. Love that we're getting more Nate Senior to bounce off Nate Junior off of. But yeah, poor Nate. You know, sideburns or not, it's a rough hang right now for him.
Yeah, Nate and Nate is like probably one of my favorite character pairings on
sounds like
show.
A great sitcom.
The Adventures of Nate and Nate. Oh, Nate Move and Over Nate, Adventures exactly. of Pete and
yeah,
Pete.
Yeah, Tired Wired.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And then I think that, like, since we're talking about that, we should probably talk about Nate's, like, drug-addled brain vision of life and death playing Chinese checkers.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There was something, like, Beetlejuicean in a way, like, going to the other side, or, like, even Twin Peaks-esque, you know, like, the red room and all behind the curtain. And he meets these individuals. He literally meets death. And his reaction when he realizes that he is shaking death's hand, he's like, oh, no, please. I want to be as far away from this being as possible.
I loved this scene. And this is actually something, Ariel, that was, like, in my head from my original watch. Like, this, like, was a scene that I remembered and made an impact on me. Yeah, it's Nate Sr. kind of welcoming him in the room. A lot of buddy boy. He introduces him to his friends, life and death. They're partners. It's a whole yin-yang thing.
It's a whole yin-yang thing. And I'm like, wow, to see it play out like that, in the sense of these two individuals given some form of human form, it just seems like almost sinister, even the life part of it, of like, yeah, you can't, the idea that you can't have one without the other is, that's just human, or that's just all life, period. But this like way that they're working together is, it doesn't really bode well for Nate and the way he's feeling, but it's a really interesting, what was most interesting to me about it was, you had these two figures and then his dad is like in the middle. His connection to death previously is now like welcoming him in into this, you know, sort of inner sanctum, whatever, of the people in charge of that are making these things happen. And it's pretty profound, you know, drugs or not. It's a very messed up and in a way kind of beautiful thing to be presented with. He's certainly not in the most, you know, harmonious place with himself to be experiencing it.
Yeah, there's something like about the whole scene that's like, it's very like ominous and a little foreboding. It's obviously raunchy. Like, there's going to be the, like, you know, they're going to like start having sex, and it's like in this kind of like very kind of humorous, a little bit irreverent. There's lots of like growling noises happening.
That's right.
Like, it's like this very like kind of illicit thing that Nate's like not supposed to be seeing. And he's kind of like seeing behind the curtain the way it all works, and this like revelation that death and life are kind of in this mutually beneficial relationship, that there's a symbiosis there. And this idea of being like in the game, that like once you enter life, you are sort of committed to going through to the end of it, right? It's like there's a conclusion, like you are going to, it's going to end. And there's like a way that Nate being in the game is starting to acknowledge that, you know, like it's even like you go back to last season when Nate Senior says this time it's personal, and it's sort of like Nate has been able to have this wall where he hasn't acknowledged that death is going to be something that is eventually part of his story. And now it's kind of like punctured through. And the fact that this scene is like, he's buddy boy, like he's the little boy, his father's there and he's going to be comforting him at some point, stroking his head and like giving him that line from the Bhagavad Gita that's, you know, somehow comforting and soothing to him. Like there's something about this scene as being like, I think a little bit of a loss of innocence for Nate. And I just found it really well done and like very powerful.
Yeah. And that I think coupled with his, you know, baptism, so to speak, that he experiences at the very end of his part of the episode where he's on the beach. Again, we got to get those exterior shots. And he goes into the water. It was very like Don Draper going into the water. You know, it's happened countless times. That was just the one that came to mind. Of like, he is, like you said, he is in the game now. And now like this thing that he has always been hyper aware of because of his father's business is now potentially kind of literally knocking on his door. And there is no running. You can't run away from something that is already inside you. And he has to now live. He has to like really, really feel that and understand it fundamentally in this way. And the fact that like his father, Richard Jenkins, does such a good job of being comforting, like you said, and in his reading of that quote, or he's really just speaking it from his head, from his wise spirit mind.
Yes.
It sounds really beautiful and really comforting and really profound. It's so much more profound than, you know, Nate reading it or Brenda, you know, finishing it for him. It just feels we have the same emotional reaction, whether we know where it's from or not, that Nate has in that moment of like, wait, no, that came from my dad. That was so pure and precious to me. And now you're like saying that it just existed in the universe. Is there anything that exists that is like real and pure? Is it all just kind of recycled human? It's the yin yang, right? Like stuff lives and stuff dies, but like other things live on, like information and knowledge and words and all that. And it's a little bit of a loss, a little bit of a real moment for Nate to realize that that wasn't.
He feels like it takes the wind out of the sails, that it's like less profound because it was something like recycled from his brain that probably Brenda was lecturing him on. And he was only like halfway listening to like,
that's pretty disappointing,
like pretentious Brenda, like talking about like all of her Eastern philosophies. Like this is, so the Bhagavad Gita comes from the Hindi tradition, from Hinduism. And like the line again, I'll just say it again, is all that lives forever. Only the shell, the perishable, passes away. The spirit is without end, eternal, deathless. And like, I think you're totally right, Ariel, that the idea that in Nate's mind, that his father comes to him in a vision from beyond the grave, like somebody who has experienced death, right? Mm-hmm. The thing that he's afraid of, the father, his protector, the person who he had all of this conflict with and never had like that satisfying relationship with when he was alive, that this man comes from the afterlife with this message to comfort his son in the time that his son needs to hear it because he's confronting his own mortality.
Right. And because Brenda's nowhere to be found.
Right. So that was what was beautiful and meaningful to him. Like not only the message, which I think is also, you know, is profound, I think, depending on where you are in your journey when you hear it. So that was like, you know, a great scene. And then like I thought a very clever note to have Brenda say, no, you did read that. Remember, you know, we read it in my apartment.
Yeah, it takes away. It's again, like, you know, we're always monitoring these instances of like whether, you know, Richard Jenkins, Nate Senior rather, is really there. And this is one of those things of like, well, that's really just from your brain. And, you know, it calls that into question. You could argue, well, that doesn't mean anything. It could still, it could be both things. Both things can absolutely be true. But I love the show once again, kind of playing with that, that idea of what is actually quote unquote real as far as the Nate Senior character. I love Nate being super high. I just want to call attention.
Oh my God, that was, like, it's so good.
Fun. And I have to say, I did not at all, when he was taking the aspirin, I did not think about the ecstasy at all.
Wow. Like,
it was not something that was in my brain.
You're just like David. You're just like, oh, forget like about that. David. Yeah.
Couldn't have been me. I don't know. Where did he get the ecstasy? I don't know. Wild. And then when he's, and then I was like, wait a minute, where would he? The aspirin. It was incredible. It was such an incredible moment.
Honestly, like, I want to say, when actors have to portray being like high or drunk or inebriated, sometimes it's very clumsy and it doesn't work for me and it takes me out of it.
Kind of cartoonish.
This was so good. This was so good. It was so funny and real and cringy. Like, Brenda comes in and he's like all up all over her, like very handsy. He's like, look who's here, everybody. Like,
I first noticed he was so sweaty. And then I was like, wait, did they just have sex right before they walked in? This is so rude.
And the cotton mouth comment. Yeah. And then like the Nikolai, you were so beautiful.
Has like, anyone ever said something so kind to Nikolai before?
It's, that scene was so funny. Like, I honestly give Peter Krause like an Oscar. I know that, or like, I know that you don't give Oscars for television shows, but like,
we do now.
That was like the best performance of somebody on drugs. And then like, I love how the whole family like has their reactions to like, Nate is obviously high. Like, Claire and Gabe like notice it because, you know, like they're hip. They do drugs.
Yeah.
And,
I think Gabe especially notices it right away.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like, you know, Nikolai, like Ruth says, like, that's a very strange compliment.
Ruth's trying to keep the peace.
Ruth has no idea what's going on. Then Brenda's the one who finally like just tells him that he's high. And then Nate's reaction to it is like, no, I didn't take anything. And he's like, oh, yeah, I am high.
Like, she's like, look at the light. And he's like, oh, my God.
It's like, I love the little halos. And then, like, and then he says, I'm so not hungry. The way he pours the wine, like all the way up to the top of the wine glass.
Yeah.
It's all so good. And then like the whole after dinner scene where Nate is with Brenda and David and explaining that like everything is about flow and is like, this is exactly the kind of like terrible conversation you have with a person who's high when you're not
when
high.
You're not exactly.
And you're like, nothing that they're saying is interesting at all.
I love the image that we get, like Ruth, I think, and Nikolai are talking and on the other side of like that indoor window that they have.
Yeah.
And you're just seeing like Nate raise his arms and like deep in conversation. You're like, oh, God, what is he talking about?
Oh, it was my favorite. It's one of my favorite scenes. It's so good.
Yeah.
And Ruth is like horrified. She's like, I just read a book about my son being gay. Do I have to read another book about my son being on drugs?
Ay, ay, ay. Nate, what a guy. What a guy.
What a guy.
And he gets, we should mention, he gets at the very end a call from David. And at first he's a little confused because David's like, oh, you got your results today. And we're like, dun, dun, dun. Does David know? But of course not.
No, it's his funeral.
The funeral director's license. He passed. And
he's like, I forgot I even took that thing.
Nate could not care any less about that right now. But the real reason I want to bring it up is David says to him, I'm proud of you.
Yeah,
and he really means it. And it's really sweet.
And when Nate is high, it's obviously like a little bit clunky because he's on ecstasy. But he like, you know, he tells David, like, I hope I didn't like screw you up when we were kids. Yeah. And like, it's really important to me. You're my only brother. Like there's a lot of warmth and sweetness there. And it's like, yeah. I think that that's ultimately what makes the show successful, is that like the characters really care for each other. And this family has a lot of love, even if each of the individuals is limited in their own ways. There is a lot of love there. And that is nice to see in the show, like, especially I think some of our dramas have started to get a little bit darker. Like, you can't say that the Succession Roy family like loved each other, or you know,
certainly not in this way.
So there, so I do really enjoy those moments.
Yeah, and the way David, I think David's reaction is kind of a good microcosm of what you're talking about, in the sense of he has progressed a lot, and he is allowing Nate to be like, you know, as effusive and as loving as he is being in that moment. But there's still a little bit of David that's like, oh, you're getting a little bit too close to me, like both physically and emotionally. But he's trying. And that's like, you know, we see we've been monitoring David's acceptance and like openness with his family. And this is definitely a good moment for him, but it's still very much David being David, which I like.
And I would love to see Nate like tell David about his like condition. You know, it's like, yeah, Brenda can't be bothered with you, but David would listen. Like that would be good. Like, talk to your brother about it. But you know, they're not quite there yet. Their blood is very thin. They've been taking lots of aspirin.
Yes, their blood is thin, but David's blood is very hot.
Ooh, yeah. Let's talk about like David and Ruth together a little bit, because Ruth is now ready for David to be having sex with men. But unfortunately, David is not having any sex with men.
No, it's kind of, you know, it's that classic story of bad timing. You're not having sex, and your mom is asking you about all the sex that you're having that now she is accepting. It's a tale as old as time. It's really funny. I love the moment where all three Fisher kids are sitting around the table, and Ruth is telling them about like that Nikolai is going to come over, and you know, they're just like, she's being very, again, based on this book that she's reading, she's trying to be very mature about like talking about sex and being open.
Nikolai and I are having a sexual relationship now, and we're all adults, we're sexual beings, and we should acknowledge that.
And they can't help themselves. I do genuinely love seeing the kids act like kids, as much as it annoys Ruth in this scene. It's just like, there's an innocence there, there's a camaraderie there that they're sharing that you get the sense was certainly rare, because and as far as Claire specifically, like, because of the age difference, there wasn't much opportunity for that when they were growing up. And it's so nice. I love kids being kids.
And I do think that that's part of sibling relationships. Like, even when you're adults, like when you get into that family dynamic and one of your parents starts acting a certain way, like you revert back to, you know, those kind of old antics. So that is very fun to see. Like, I like Ruth is, you know, David, if you have a special friend, I'd like him to come as well. And then he's like, well, why is my friend special?
This is one of the most realistic things the show has ever done. This is so funny. You can bring your special friend. Oh my God. David is all of us. When he's like, why is my friend special? Why can't they just be my friend or my boyfriend or like my significant other, whatever. Parents. She's trying. She's clearly very much trying.
And this is also where, like, you know, David shares that, like, you know, they're asking, well, what about that black cop? And he's like, well, he met someone else. So now, and I like how, you know, you see Claire has like a little bit of like kind of private sadness, like, oh, I liked him
with you. And previous to that, Claire had a moment with Ruth where, you know, Ruth is first asking her, and like, now that's when Ruth reveals that David came out to her. And Claire is like, oh, okay. And then she's like, okay, we're all on this page. And an ally until the day she dies, Claire, apparently, because she's like, well, I don't care about, you know, his relationship or whatever. I just want him to be happy. Like, she's saying all the right things. And
I like how Ruth asks, like, if she's ever had feelings of same sex attraction, and she's like, no. And she's like, it's nothing to be ashamed of. And Claire's like, yeah, I know.
I know. Yes, exactly. It's like, that's not what I'm saying. I just don't want to be talking to you about it.
And Ruth says, when I was your age, I actually had a crush on Jane Fonda. And Claire's like, well, she's single again. She's so now's your chance.
Ay. Arguably the most savage thing that Claire has ever said to her mother. It was so funny. But also Jane Fonda with Frances Conroy. I can stand this.
No, today, like, Twitter would just go nuts. The internet would lose it. It was like, it would almost be as big as finding out that Parker Posey was slated to be on White Lotus season 3.
Stop. When I heard, oh my God, of all those names, I liked a lot of them, but Parker, it sent me over the edge.
You're going to have a good time with that one.
I literally cannot. I cannot, and I cannot wait. And Ruth, you know, the dinner doesn't go all that great for Ruth, but, you know, speaking of David again, to bring them in parallel, he has his own reasons why he, you know, to the point of he's not having sex right now. He got the gonorrhea, you know, news at the beginning of the,
he got the gonorrhea. Yeah.
He did get it. Yeah. He definitely has it. And the way the doctor, when she gives him the script for the medication for that, she's like, bad boy.
Bad boy. She's like, well, did you have unprotected sex? And he's like, yeah. The show also does like a really like, because we see Nate in the MRI right before we see David getting the news about his screening. And so we think that Nate is getting good news, but it's really...
Yeah,
David.
Yeah. Great editing trickery. Mm-hmm. This is the good doctor that we all deserve.
Doctor, yeah.
This is the one that we deserve. Not
somebody
the
needs
Nate
to call Nate a bad boy.
when Nate started to run out of the office, the doctor should have been like, hey, bad you're boy. Bad boy. Ay, ay, ay.
David. So the more from like this dinner though that Ruth puts on so that we can all share our adult sexual lives together as a family. Nikolai says grace, Ariel.
And we're still watching him do it. We've watched the episode and he's still going. I was like, I have to go pod. I can't keep listening to this.
Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. Lord bless.
And it's just like such a great, subversion of our expectations of the kind of things that will come out of Nikolai's mouth. Like, it's so funny, but like clearly, I think what makes it funnier is that clearly it's so important to him, right? Like, it's presented as humor in the sense of like, it's an awkward situation, but it is very important to him and he's not making light of it. And it's just like, who is this person? Who is this Nikolai? This is where he exhibits his passion, when he's with Ruth and when he's praying.
Yeah. The Fishers like really have the strangest dinner guests. Like, Brenda coming to dinner? Like, I mean, it's just like this collection of people, like a dinner with the Fishers will always deliver.
Yes. And Nate even says that to Brenda, right? He's like, you know, it's going to be something, you know, it's a good entertainment value.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Nikolai thinks that the dinner went really well, but like Ruth is completely embarrassed by it.
She's like, that was embarrassing. I kind of agree with Nikolai. Like, it was a family. Nate got high, but like it was fine. Nobody started an argument. Mm-hmm. It was pretty good. I was like, Nikolai, you're totally right. And you're becoming more chill by the moment. And
that's what the Fishers need. Like, she's like, my son was high. And Nikolai's like, he just seemed happy. Like, what's so bad about that?
It's true. Cut to Nate, like putting his arms above his head and talking about the flow. It's really interesting that this was an instance of like Ruth bringing Nikolai into the fold and it not really being about like whether or not you know, about her relationship and some kind of statement on where her relationship stands. And it was very much like she is somewhat on the same page as this person, and they're able to have a conversation about their children. Like, there was something really, really sweet about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And this like culminates in Ruth and David, like eventually having a conversation where David says, like, you know, it would have been okay for Nikolai to spend the night. And Ruth is like, well, I don't need your permission, sir. And he's like, well, yeah, and I don't need your permission. And they have this like acknowledgement of like, we can respect each other's like lives and romantic lives without having to like confront it in each other's faces all the time. It's like, we can just respect that we independently have the autonomy to make these decisions, and that's okay.
Yeah. And it's not going to be, it doesn't have to be, like you said, something that we're using against each other in a way, like kind of, you know, a way to cause friction on purpose. Like, that's such a waste of time. You gotta get your head in the game. You gotta, you know, you gotta focus on what's important. And what's important to David is to go out to dinner or to lunch with Keith and Keith's boyfriend, and then call Keith to be like, but what if we just hung out, just us?
Yeah, I mean, Keith is like a little bit the worst, I have to say. It's like, I think that it's like nice of Keith and Eddie. Like, so, you know, David ends up coming back to St. Stephen's, a more progressive church, because even though he had like somewhat of a positive reaction at St. Bart's, like eventually people were just kind of giving him the cold shoulder because of what he said. So he's back at St. Stephen's, which is good, but he's also like a little bit trying to weasel his way back into Keith's life. And like, Keith, I think is, and you know, I think a lot of people have probably been in a situation and can relate to this, where there's like somebody that they used to be romantically involved in and they maintain a friendship. And for one of the people, that friendship is like, possibly there's hope there that something else could come of it. And the other person has moved on. Like, David is very clearly still hoping to pursue something romantic with Keith, and Keith is definitely moving on with Eddie, and he should probably be acknowledging that David's in a different space from him and keeping like a little bit more distance.
Yeah, I think it seems like it's happening more than it should, as far as like the amount of lunches and meals that they're sharing together. And there is this inherent awkwardness to the whole situation, because they're kind of running out of good reasons of like why they should keep having these meals. You know, like you said, in this case, they're taking him out, like kind of welcoming him back to the church, which totally makes sense. But to your point about Keith, like, he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, he's aware of the situation, and it does seem like he is a little bit confused himself as to what he wants, and but he should know that he's not making the situation any better by allowing David to have false hope, whether or not, you know, he would argue that David is reading into it too much. I think it's a little unfair to put it all on David for sure.
He goes to St. Bart's to support David when he's giving his sermon. Like, he goes up to David's room after like they hang out and have their nighttime burrito stroll. Like, he's kind of like walking this line. And then when David does, you know, even like, you know, David says that he wants to hang out more, like he probably called him a little bit too early.
But was, David, like, up all night waiting, like, okay, I'll just wait till 7 a.m. It's a totally reasonable call time.
But like, you know, Keith is like, David's right that Keith is sanctimonious about it. It's like, either, you know, either maintain a boundary to like, or, you know, like, I do feel like I have empathy with David here, but it's probably like for the best for everyone, if Keith really is moving on, that, that he and David are not spending that much time together.
Yeah, moving on, because he's moving in with this guy.
Moving in with Eddie. They're going to go like skydiving or windsurfing or whatever. Right. They're going to win like a Mr. Gay Black Man, which is David's fantasy.
They have a really good chance.
David's chances. I don't like David's chances. No, David's chances are bad.
First of all, he needs clothing, and then he needs to reassess what he's doing on that stage.
Well, he needed some way to stand out in that crowd.
He's like, I'm here.
I'm here. I'm translucent. I'm completely naked.
He really is translucent. God bless him. Yeah. And not to mention, just briefly, like that date that he has with this firefighter who wears the red baseball cap. And he's like, you know, I didn't feel the spark. You should probably go back to Keith. I mean, he didn't say that part, but that's what it kind of spells for David.
And this is why, like, you know, David, if you had been going to those hot gay cop and firefighter parties, then you would have many, many more people to choose from.
You could be in your own fake relationship that you're also moving in with and like fourth wheeling with Keith. Let's up the ante even more. David. And then there's like a double date, but really it's a date between David and Keith. Wow.
Yeah. So anything else from this episode that we didn't get to, Ariel?
We mentioned briefly the Rico thing. I think it's just interesting to mention how he leaves the episode. And by that, again, it's this storm cloud of pretty severe Spanish curses. And, you know, he his sister-in-law is weaved in throughout the episode because she's on the cast of this movie where the actress died at the beginning of the episode. And we get that information at the end that his wife had to ask for money. And it seems like, and it's interesting because it flies in the face of what we've seen a little bit, what we've seen from Rico, who is trying very hard at work in the beginning of the episode to like pick up the slack and be more of a forward facing front of house person, if you will. Instead of only being, and I put that in quotes because he's clearly Michelangelo, instead of only being, you know, behind the scenes and doing all the repair work.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see if that, you know, what comes of his conversation with Vanessa that he very clearly is going to go yell at her about.
Yeah, we know that like the Fishers have not paying Rico what he's worth. That's part of the reason that he went to Kroger initially. But eventually he does come back and he wasn't able to negotiate as strong a position as he wanted to eventually make partner. And he's been dissatisfied with that for a while. In this episode, again, we get like Rico not being treated well by the Fishers. Like he asked Nate to drive a body to the crematorium and Nate just not into
it's that. Like you see Nate he pauses for so long, you really see him think about like, well, I gotta put him in the car, then I gotta drive the car, the truck, then I gotta stop, then I gotta drive back. He's like,
no, he's like, it sounds like a lot. Like Rico is like single-handedly like propping up this entire business. And he has two kids at home. And he's like, oh, this is like Vanessa's overwhelmed. Like the one kid's sick, the other one's not sleeping, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And Nate's just like, well, I don't feel like it.
Yeah, right. Especially because it seems like this isn't an instance of Rico just kind of bellyaching and making up excuses. As we've seen in the past, this is like just a very busy life that he's leaving with small children, and Nate is not single, but certainly doesn't have kids, and his girlfriend's kind of ignoring him.
Yeah.
So while he may not be in a mental state to do it, and we certainly sympathize in that regard, like you said, it's unfortunate timing and unfortunate the situation that it is once again Rico who kind of like bears the brunt.
Right.
Of that.
So Rico is like not treated well. And then, you know, this scene adds some like additional context to find out that like he's probably not even making enough money to support the family. We know that like Vanessa's also a nurse, so this is like a dual income home, and they're still struggling. I like that we finally meet Angelica, because she's been mentioned before as like somebody who sometimes helps pick up slack and take care of the kids, like so she's probably very close to her sister. But we have to imagine like Rico is like pretty kind of an old school, like with traditional notions of masculinity.
Absolutely.
And the idea that like he's not supporting his family and that his wife has to ask his sister for money, I'm sure is going to be a huge blow to his self-esteem. And there's probably going to be some fallout from that.
No, for sure. I mean, it's literally about him, him feeling like his manhood is being questioned. That's one of the few phrases that he utters that aren't just straight curses. It's like, oh, you think I'm not a man, basically is what he says. So he's going to go be a very toxic man and go talk to his wife about it. And we've seen, to your point, we've seen enough of Rico's, you know, toxic and very
homophobic
machismo attitude, which, you know, in fairness to him, that's what he grew up in very clearly, and he has to do work to combat that, but you know,
he's not doing that work
he's not doing the work right now. He is not in the game yet.
No,
he's doing
lots of work, like embalming and reconstructing, but
and
he's
wearing
not
that
do-
like blue Jeff Probst type cargo shirt, like that was very
he's not doing the emotional work. He's not doing that work.
No, he hasn't asked like Jeff would, what is love, what is that, what does that feel like? I think that's everything.
The last thing I do need to shout out, just because I am a person of a certain age and this like reference like completely tickled me, when Nate wakes up from his like drug addled stupor, there's a Ron Popeil infomercial for the Ronco rotisserie that I watched so many times high school and college, because like you would just turn on television and there would only be infomercials,
right?
And Ron Popeil would say, set it and forget it. And that woman, I don't know that woman's name, but she was so impressed with all of that meat that came out of that. She could not get over it. That was art, people.
We forget it. We were all that woman in that moment watching that for the first time.
I was
time
like,
or for the
I gotta get this.
500th time as most of this experience. There was also the other one that I meant to Google where the guy's like, well, if I made a woman, I would take all the ingredients and
Was this like a Pat Robertson like type of like some kind of like televangelist? It was like a weird Christian thing, right?
Yeah.
I would like make my wife. Was that what it was?
He would make his wife a certain specific way. I can't remember that.
And then there was like something with like gerbils eating food.
Oh my God. I have to assume. No, I mean, these are probably all real, but I was going to say,
I bet one
of them was like part, you know, the way the drugs kind of like come back in a little bit when you're getting over it. But I assume it's just more fun to have gotten, to your point, real across the board, real infomercials.
This is what we did before the TikTok, kids. This is what we had.
This, we used to call it TikTok. Nobody will tell you that. But we were like, wow, TikTok, it's getting late. It's time for infomercials. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Do you remember that? Do you remember the Ronco rotisserie?
Absolutely. When you said set it and forget it, I had like a visceral reaction. I'm like, is it 3 a.m.? Am I sitting in the dark? Because I remember this.
Oh, I love that we have that, Ariel.
We share. One of the many things we share. And I'm so grateful.
And I mean, we will continue to share the rest of season 2 of Six Feet Under. Isn't that amazing? We're on this journey. Now I think our coverage is going to weekly instead of twice a week.
Yes, once a week. Bear with us, be kind to us as we get our heads back in the game and do this dance, this yin yang of watching an episode and then covering it.
So until next week, Ariel, where can people keep up with you? What else are you doing? I know you're busy.
I think I am busy from what I can remember. It's all coming back to me now. I am on Twitter at That Other Ariel, always trying to retweet all the things I'm covering, and which include movies every week with Grace, Bosher Recaps Theater. And I am starting coverage. We just released the trailer. Philly and I will be covering Masters of the Air, which is premiering on Apple TV Plus on January 26th. But we were doing some pre-coverage because that show exists kind of in the same universe as two previously made series, one being Band of Brothers, which we will be covering in its entirety next week. And then the week after that, we'll be covering The Pacific, which was another miniseries. And that'll all lead us into our week-to-week episodic coverage of Masters of the Air. Look out for that. I think that's everything. What about you, Amanda?
I am about to, I'm covering The Curse with Grace on post-show recaps. We just released our recap of the penultimate episode of season one. So we will be back next week with the season one finale. I cannot wait to see how they land that crazy plane. So definitely check that out if you're watching The Curse, or if you're interested, you can binge it all and catch up in time for the finale. What will be coming out later this month, I think it drops in the second week of January. Grace and I are going to be doing recaps for Fargo. Not Fargo. I've started watching Fargo. That's almost over. For another crime anthology.
Yes.
True Detective.
Yes. Easy to get them confused.
True Detective Night Country. That series is airing on, let me give you the date because people like to know. That will be on HBO on Sunday night, starting on January 14th. And you can find Grace and I right after the episodes doing immediate reactions. There's going to be a lot of post-show recaps coverage of True Detective. There will also be feedback show that Grace and Jess are doing. And then there will be Mike and LaTanya doing Versus. Versus is coming back, and they'll watching True Detective Season 1 and comparing it to True Detective Season 4. So if you've never watched True Detective before, then you can always jump in because it's an anthology. Each season is totally new. Mm-hmm. And this season features Jodie Foster in the lead role. Ever heard of her? Only like acting royalty, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So it promises to be a really great kind of female-driven season, and I'm looking forward to that. And you can keep up with everything that I'm doing by following me on Twitter, where I am at Dr. Amanda R.
We love that. Mm-hmm. We'll be back next week, as you said. Take us out, Amanda.
Yes, we'll be back next week talking about 6 Feet Under Season 2, Episode 2, Out, Out, Brief Candle. Ooh. And until then, dear listeners, rest in peace.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.